From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. We'll have open lines for you next hour and for the rest of the program, as we are halfway through now the Thanksgiving Day holiday. Hope all went well yesterday for you, and, well, you look forward to the week ahead. Well, what intrigue this story is. Radiation found where the X-Spy 8. Listen to this one. I just love this story. Traces of radioactive material that apparently killed a former Russian spy investigating the death of a Russian journalist were found at places where he ate and met other spies just before falling ill. In a statement released after his death on Thursday, Alexander Litvinenko blamed a barbaric and ruthless Russian president, Vladimir Putin, for the attack. Putin called the death a tragedy, but accused opponents of political provocation. Experts from the British Health Protection Agency called in after radiation was suspected in the death on Thursday of the 43-year-old former spy, confirmed that a large dose of what is called polonium-210 was found in his body. A London restaurant and parts of a hotel he visited before falling ill on November 1st were closed as police continued their probe. What a bizarre story. Britain's unluckiest man, who has suffered 16 major accidents, is laid up again after falling down a manhole. John Lynn's misfortunes have included two lightning strikes, a rock fall in a mine, nearly drowning, and three car crashes. He's 54 years old. He'll be out of action for 32 weeks after this latest mishap. Mr. Lynn's mishaps cover a lifetime. As a child, he fell off a horse in a cart, only to be run over then by a delivery van. When he was a teenager, he broke his arm, falling from a tree. On his way back from the hospital, his bus crashed, breaking the same arm in another place. The date on that episode was Friday the 13th. A Taiwanese woman has taken out an injunction against her husband to stop him telling her ghost stories. The woman, named only as Mrs. Chin, complained that he was giving her nightmares. She first filed a complaint with police, then applied for a personal protection order, which was approved by a district court. In her complaint, Mrs. Chin claimed her estranged husband often returned home in the dead of the night in a drunken stupor. He would then go on to tell her ghost stories for at least an hour, despite her repeated pleas for him to stop. He would tell her stories of seeing figures clothed in white floating around in the orchard, of people hanging themselves, and of the discovery of human bones near the orchard. She couldn't take it anymore, and she went to court. Now, you've heard the story of Bob Bigelow, of course. He's been on the arts program before. The success of Bigelow's Aerospace's Genesis 1 module, which has been operating in orbit now since July 12th, has put the company well ahead of its plans for bigger and more capable modules that eventually will host visitors in orbit. At present, Bigelow Aerospace is readying the next space module mission and gearing up company plans to orbit a human-related habitat. It's called the Sundancer at the firm's Ground Control Center in Las Vegas, Nevada. I guarantee you, this will end up being one of the first space hotels. In a moment, we're going to Linda Moulton Howe, our investigative reporter, earthfiles.com, as she will present an update on a very unusual series of animal deaths and disappearances. Linda Moulton Howe next on Coast to Coast AM. Linda Moulton Howe, Emmy Award-winning writer, television producer, investigative reporter, author. You know, she goes directly to the people at the forefront of science and environmental challenges, to firsthand eyewitnesses of high strangeness. She is a graduate of Stanford University, master's degree in communication. She has devoted her documentary film, television, and radio career to all kinds of productions concerning science, medicine, and environment. She's been uncovering some incredible stories recently. And Linda, this series of stories of strange animals disappearing and mutilations, this has got to be another baffling one, huh?
Well, I'll tell you, this one up in Montana, for listeners, think of kind of the Alberta border as it borders Montana, And if you know where Great Falls and Malmstrom Air Force Base is, and you go northwest of Great Falls to Conrad, that's the county seat. That's where the sheriff is. And then if you go further northwest from there, there is a ranching town called Valier. Now, that population is only 500 people. Conrad is only 3,000 people. So we're out in really very rural ranching land in Montana. And back in 2001, this is the very place, Ponderay County, where there were 14 cases of mutilations reported to the Ponderay County Sheriff's Office. They had another six that were unofficially reported to the sheriff. That made at least 20 in 2001. Then they had another reported in the same ranching area in 2005. And this past October, it was on the morning of October 9th, a friend of the ranching family, John Peterson and his family in Valier, a neighbor saw this cow down about 50 feet off of the county road, but for some reason didn't report it. And then John Peterson found his cow dead and mutilated there a couple of days later, called Sheriff Tom Kuka in Conrad, and the sheriff and a couple of deputies came out on the 11th and the 12th. And this is a case where Sheriff Tom Kuka called me and said, Linda, we need your help. And Sheriff Kuka is a very down-to-earth, open-minded sheriff, and he has dealt now with, what is it? It could be 21 to 22 mutilations in 5 years, if you count those six that were just discussed and not reported officially.
Right.
And he knows, as he says, we're not dealing with predator, we're not dealing with disease, we're not dealing with satanic cult. Whatever we're dealing with comes from the sky. And this time, when he called me, he said, Linda, we've got physical evidence on the ground that this animal came down from above, bounced, left a bounce mark that shoved a soil going from a south to north direction, and then it landed about 4 feet away from the bounce mark with the head and the legs going north with the bounce mark behind it, moving south to north. And if you want to see photographs of the bounce mark, of the area, and to follow along with some of the details I'm going to give you tonight for the very first time from the biophysicist W.C. Levengood, who has been studying soil and plants from this fascinating scene, you can go to earthfiles.com, and at the very top of the headlines page, the headline is Scientific Data Supports Theory That Mutilated Montana Cow Dropped from Sky and Bounced. Now, this is quite fascinating because I have been trying to get to the bottom of animal mutilations
for years,
for a quarter of a century, really, going back to my documentary, A Strange Harvest. And it was while I was making that film that it was law enforcement. So many would talk to me only off the record, not in front of my television crew and camera, but they were telling me, Linda, we are dealing with something that has to be coming in from the sky because we can't find tracks. We can't find evidence. There's no blood. These animals seem to have been handled someplace else. And then for some incomprehensible reason, they are returned to a site in the pasture, either where they originated or a nearby pasture, with no signs of any struggle around them, and often, even on wet ground or snow or very dry, powdery land, one of the things that I have heard law enforcement say so many times, Linda, we can't even find the tracks of the animal that is laying here around them. And in this case, it's the same thing. This was on October 8th at 5:30 in the evening. The Petersons had just moved a herd, part of their cattle herd, about 200 cattle, into this particular field after they had harvested barley.
Right.
So they knew that everything on the end of the day on October 8th was fine. All the cows were alive and well. And now we know that a neighbor early the next morning saw this cow lying 50 feet beyond the barbed wire fence that you can see at earthfiles.com, but was busy or something and hadn't reported it. But we know now that it had to have happened in the night of October 8th to 9th. Now, I got there on this Monday, November 20th, as a guest field reporter and a person working with a crew from Canada who are doing a series for the Discovery Channel called Best Evidence. And I work with them Monday, Tuesday, and we left Wednesday. And this is, what, 6 weeks after October 9th. And that cow stands out in that beige kind of barley field now, still, just like a big black lump. It was one of those cases where you walk up to this big cow, and there had been not a single coyote, not any predator bite on this entire body. It is still lying there untouched. I could lift the leg up in the back and look at where the udder had been removed, and a really basically a circular excision. You can see the fresh photographs at Earth Files from October 11th and 12th from the sheriff's office. And while I was there just a couple of days ago lifting up the back leg, there is that circular excision. The rectum had been cored out, and at the head, an ear on the sky-facing side, which was the left side, the ear was missing, the left eyeball was missing, a very thin circular piece of tissue around the eye was gone, the left jaw flesh was gone, the tongue was removed, the udder had been removed, and the rectal vaginal area had been cored out. And that is the classic definition of animal mutilations that have been reported in both the northern and the southern hemispheres now for at least 60 years. And in one case, the BBC had found a journal report from Australia that went back to around 1904 when a rancher in Australia had reported something like 111 sheep with these exact same excisions from their bodies, from all of them, no blood and no tracks. And if that is true, that means that we're dealing with a global phenomenon that has the same pattern of excisions from the beginning of the 20th century and running now into the 21st century.
Sounds like this harvesting of body parts, Linda.
Well, I, at least with the military and intel people who have talked with me largely off the record, there have been two categories in which they place the possible reasons, and you find out that a lot of this is still speculation, even by people who have been studying this professionally, and that is a genetic harvest to be applied to something for a non-human intelligence and food or nutrition for something in a non-human intelligence. And when I say that, where once upon a time people used to kind of qualify or be embarrassed to say, well, animal mutilations are clearly being done by something that is not human from outer space. In his now classic, and I think one of the most important books of the last several decades, is Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso's book, The Day After Roswell.
Sure.
And in that book, there are two or three pages that he devotes to his firsthand knowledge about animal mutilations, what they were learning about in Washington, D.C. while he was working in the Pentagon for General Arthur Trudeau, who was handpicked by Dwight D. Eisenhower to be the head of research and development for the Army. And he had told me before he died in 1998 that he had seen highly classified documents with his own eyes that said that there were unusual animal deaths in the northern and the southern hemispheres. No tracks, no blood, the same pattern of excisions that we're talking about today in this Pendere County cow, and that the perpetrators, and that's the way he said it, that the documents said the perpetrators were extraterrestrial biological entities. One document was dated as early as 1951, and that it was a high priority of our government to keep all of this information from the public and the media in the interest of national security. Well, George, the one thing I feel strongly is that if we are to be in a country of the people, by the people, for the people, we should have the same information that our government has about something non-human interacting with Earth life.
Of course. Let me play the devil's advocate, though, for a moment, Linda. Do you think the public can really comprehend and accept the fact that extraterrestrials will use that, might be taking body parts from animals, and who knows, they may even be doing it from human beings?
I don't think the human category is part of this story, at least not in all of the work I've done the last 2.5 decades. But the animal life, both live, and that includes deer and elk and marmots and wild rabbits, as well as domestic animals of all kinds, are definitely in this phenomenon. And I've tried to say to audiences, as I've said to ranchers, I've traveled around and gathered tissue in pastures. I've done a lot of this work myself. And I really don't think that there is any evidence to support the idea that we humans are threatened by this. And sometimes when military or intel people have said, Linda, there may be something about this, we're still trying to understand it, in which something out there has a survival issue. But then you say, well, why would Earth provide any kind of a genetic mechanism for helping something else survive? Now, that is a big question, and it has a lot of backstory behind it. But before we get too far afield, and I know we'll be coming up to the break, I just want to say that what has highlighted this particular investigation is the physical evidence on the ground that this cow bounced, literally hit the ground hard enough to shove soil up going in a south to north direction, and where it ended up, it was very interesting that the body, when they rolled it over to look underneath, all of the barley stubble, which is about 6 to 8 inches high, was very neatly lined up and all going north to south, the opposite direction.
As you see in crop formations, that kind of order and pattern?
Well, you know, that's a very good point, because one of the speculations, and it's only speculation, there is a photograph, I'm looking at it right now at earthfiles.com, and it shows the back of the animal as law enforcement rolled it up, and there are all of those very neatly lined up barley stubble going north to south. And what I'm going to talk to you about in some detail in the second half hour are some of the fascinating things that biophysicist W.C. Levengood has found in studying the soil and plants. And I ask him, since we know that we're dealing with some kind of energy systems that are interacting with the plants and soil, that is a given from 10 years of his work that's been published in prestigious science journals when he has studied the crop formations and what he calls bovine excision sites, because he said the excisions are so precise that he finds using the word mutilation difficult, and that if you're dealing with an energy system that has negatively and positively charged ions in it, then is it possible that this is identical to the beam technologies that at least a dozen people in the last 20-some years have told me, I have seen an animal rising in a beam of light from my pasture, or people have seen animals lowered in these beams, or the animal is coming down, the beam flips off, and the animal drops to the ground, leaving a crater, or in this case, if it was a beam, that might explain why this animal ended up hitting the ground hard and bouncing. And if it is a beam, and George, if it has the ability to neutralize gravity, a phrase I'm using because I don't have any other words, I have no comprehension about this technology, except that it's suspending, according to eyewitnesses, heavy animals in it, then possibly, as this beam came in from south to north, that something happened at the point on the ground where the beam interacted with this barley stubble before it released and the animal dropped. And if so, maybe the barley right there was pulled north to south and the animal dropped.
And it must have dropped from at least several hundred feet, Linda, at least, minimally, I would guess, to make that kind of impression in the soil. Hey, Linda, because we're going to eat up so much time this hour, can you take calls next hour?
Oh, sure.
Okay, great. We'll do that because she's still got so much to talk about. This is absolutely fascinating. We'll be back. Well, you've got to pick up the After Dark newsletter. You can do that by calling 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com. But here's the great thing about the subscription. We will give you two separate CDs, Art Bell Classic Interviews with the late Father Malachi Martin, Perfect Possession, Exorcisms, Demonology. Take advantage of it. You know, we had one CD that we gave out a long time ago. Then we found this old program, this classic, a collector's item, a Christmas gift. So you get that. You get both CDs and the After Dark newsletter for one price. And it's only the price of the After Dark newsletter. They're free. 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back with Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, I was guessing several hundred feet at least the animal would have had to have been dropped. Would you say that's probably accurate, maybe even higher?
Well, it is hard right now to judge since none of us have done any experiments dropping a 1,300-pound or 1,500-pound
exactly.
cow vertically down. But you have to assume that over the years, sheriffs have reported animals that have broken bones. There were the cases in Oregon, Sand Springs, Oregon, in the late 70s, in which it was a cowhand, and he saw and heard several animals being dropped from what he estimated was 200 or 300 feet in the air down through the trees. And where their bodies landed, there were a crater around each. In this case, it wasn't a crater. The bounce mark, though, definitely has a depression, and the soil was pushed from the south to the north. And then where the cow landed with its head and feet going north, you can see in the photographs that they took on October 12th that there's even some of the barley and some of the soil is not exactly covering, but definitely the legs have pushed up against the soil and the barley. So the animal came from the bounce and maybe even a bit of a slide, which makes the barley lying the opposite direction under the cow really mysterious, unless there was some kind of technology interacting and pulling that barley down. And there is a very important point as you stand there, and I was on the south side of the body in looking back to where something would be coming in, this energy. And to the north and to the west, there are, gosh, at least 4, 5, 6 homes, businesses, all within a mile of where this animal is lying. And then when you look across the county road and you're looking now east, you are looking at a U.S. Air Force missile launch control station. And essentially, I realized that if I had a map that was detailed of that area and that if I had a compass and I drew a circle with that needle at the body of that cow, it might be that the cow is lying right between, we'll call it the residential civilization, and the station that its job is to be ready with computers to launch missiles if that were necessary. Now, that is a symbolic metaphor, but you can't escape it when you're out there, that this animal is lying in a peculiar kind of midway between those two. Now, I talked with Sheriff Kuka about the fact that here we've got physical evidence on the ground of this bounce mark, and this would be a very valuable case to involve biophysicist W.C. Lovingood in Michigan, who has worked now for 10 years on analyzing soil and plants and crop formations and at other mutilation sites. And he has reported some of his work in things like Physiologia Plantarum, which is the world's most respected botany journal, and the Scientific Journal for Exploration, and a number of others. And his basic overall theory is that the energy systems that are interacting where animals are found dead and in cereal crops, where the animals are completely, or where there are plants that are completely growing and get harvested, so it's two different energy interactions, at the animals in the soil and the plants, he has found what he thinks is the same kind of spinning plasmas involved in an energy system, but in the crop formations, the plants aren't killed. In the bovine excisions, as he calls it, it may be what so many people have said, these animals must be taken someplace else, handled, excised, and then returned by the beam technology, so that the beam itself and whatever is doing the transporting is not what is excising these parts from the animal. So this energy system may be used by whatever this intelligence is for a whole lot of processes, of which this one might be a case in Pendre County, Montana. Now, here is something that has surprised W.C. Levengood and reinforces this idea that there is some kind of a technology that comes in from a direction and is intense enough to be able to hold this heavy cow in it up until a point when it's dropped. And this is what he found. The sheriff was good enough to go from the body of the cow in three directions, north, west, and south, because to the east directly is that road. And he took samples, a lot of samples, going out every few feet all the way to 200 feet, which we assumed was going to be the baseline control sampling of the soil and of whatever volunteer fresh barley plants were coming up that would have chlorophyll that Levengood could examine. Well, it turns out in the laboratory analysis that the strongest changes metabolically, biophysically, biochemically in the plants and the soil was at the 200-foot south of control. The ones going west and the ones going north were just normal. And here's another piece of this data that we have found in so many other mutilation sites. If you go from the body of the animal and you go in three or four directions and you go out 12 inches and then you go out 2 feet, 3 feet, 5 feet, 10 feet, and you get up to 20 feet, in many cases, he has found that the energy changes in those first 20 feet with another high point at 20 feet in a circle, encircling the site where the animal is laying. And again, you can jump from the biophysical and biochemical data and say, if there is a circle 20 feet around where a mutilated cow is laying, perhaps that is defining the diameter of whatever this beam technology is that people have watched animals go up and come down. So now try in your mind's eye to imagine a beam that is 20 feet in diameter, has this 1,300-pound cow suspended in it, is coming in from the south, going almost straight north on an angle. And as that angle would first interact with the ground at about 200 feet from where the cow eventually was dropped and bounced, that might be why the energy is the strongest at 200 feet, falls off to 20 feet, rises, and then at 12 inches from the cow, it was the lowest reading that biophysicist Levengood has ever gotten in data. Hmm. Now, and it was almost to zero. He has never seen that before. And then in the soil beneath the animal, it almost dropped nearly to zero. And he's trying to figure this out by a fascinating series of studies he's doing in the lab right now. He built what he's calling soil tanks. He wanted to know if you've got H2O molecules of water in soil, and that he's done a tremendous amount of work on what he calls charged charge density plasmas that are an energy that is held in soil by the water. And that if you have impact on that soil, what would happen to the charges in that water? Well, he's been for the last couple of weeks working in these soil tanks, and he now thinks that he has got the corollary of physical impact in the soil tanks that are changing the charge density plasmas in the soil exactly as the measurements were where that body came down so hard and then bounced to a landing position. This is the first data of this kind that we have ever gotten.
This is what has always perplexed me, Linda. Okay, so let's say extraterrestrials are picking up these animals, testing them, genetically testing them, doing what they're doing. Why return the carcass with, you know, parts of the body gone? Why don't they just keep the animal and, do whatever they're going to do with it?
Back in the fall of 1979, when I first started on this very long journey trying to understand why were these animals being found all over Colorado and the western states and all the provinces of Canada and everywhere where they were being found, and hearing law enforcement ask me exactly that question, George, why are these animals being returned? And there was one former retired sheriff, Tex Graves, from Logan County, living in Sterling. And that was the place where I sat and looked at 266 some color Polaroids that he had collected from animal mutilations in the 70s. And there was one in which a large steer apparently had been held down by something. And the ear, the eye, the tongue, the jaw flesh, the genitals, and the rectum had been cored out. But the animal had dug an 8-inch hole with its head. And the sheriff picked up that photograph and he said, Linda, look where the feet are, and you could see clearly. There's not a mark. There's not a sign of struggle. Those feet were held perfectly together. Nothing moved on this animal except the head. And he said, unlike other cases where we think the animal has been taken away and then returned dead and mutilated, this is a case in which the animal was held by something incomprehensible and the head was allowed to move, and it dug this 8-inch hole. And then the sheriff said, it's almost as if something were saying in almost a flaunting way, this is what we can do. Now, that's the rare case when anything like that has happened.
That doesn't sound friendly, Linda, at all.
Well, we're trying to make a point. Remember, I've talked a great deal this year about what's growing evidence that our government was in an attack mode with the DISC technology, and there was retaliation. We don't know how complex this chess game might be, and some of the animal mutilations, especially those around places like Malmstrom Air Force Base in Great Falls in Montana, who knows? Some of them might have been done as demonstrations of a technology that could do this to animals in a flaunting way.
For 25-plus years? I mean, how much of a demonstration do they need?
Oh, no, I'm not saying this is all demonstration. I'm saying that some of these cases might be. I think that where we started with the discussion that there might be a genetic harvest.
Right.
Excuse me, I'm suffering allergies. I've even taken an allergy pill, and I'm still suffering. That we are talking about a genetic harvest, and we're talking about possibly nutrition, and we might have a few cases where the intelligence is trying to make some kind of point, and this is how complex it is. And when you say, why would the animals be returned, it was a sheriff trying to say something wants us to know what it's doing and what it's capable of.
Jeez, this is so bizarre, Linda. I mean, is it unusual for you to get a call from law enforcement and have them say, hey, we need some help, Linda?
Well, this was, to me, I guess you would say, the first time in 2.5 decades that I ever had a sheriff who has dealt with so many animal mutilations. And knowing what a good guy with what a really solid credible background. Everybody in the community respects him enormously. And you know that he knows that he's dealing with something extraordinary and that he is aware of my work, and he was reaching out and saying, you might be able to help us because we have this physical evidence. And when you put it in the context of how many mutilations they've had there in just 5 years, at least 21 now, and that this is going on in South America as we speak, Argentina and Chile are reporting animal mutilations on a regular ongoing basis. There is one estimate that since 2002, that veterinarians and law enforcement in about six or seven of the provinces in Argentina and up along the border between Argentina and Chile, that they've had over 3,200 reports of unusual animal deaths. And that in those regions, week after week, are reports of people, law enforcement, bankers, all kinds of professional people who have been reporting seeing really unusual things in the sky and the same beam technology. And to underscore the fact that while we have this case in Montana and that there have been many other cases, that down in South America, there have been now multiple reports of a beam coming down into water tanks that are raised on stilts above the land, and they might have 40, 45,000 gallons of water in them, and people have seen some kind of unidentified aerial object settle over those water tanks. They have seen a beam of some sort go into the water, and then the next day, the farmer finds that he does not have a drop of water in his water tanks. And you stand back from that and say, what is that demonstration about?
Oh, gosh.
Right? And there was one other case down in South America where one of these emptied water tanks raised up on these high legs, the farmer couldn't believe it, but I think it was something like 30 cattle, this was a couple of years ago, were found all dead inside of the water tank where the water had been removed. And everyone was shaking their head and saying, whatever is doing this, what is the message? And that is the same question when I started out going out to ranchers and to law enforcement and trying to get to the bottom of animal mutilations starting in September of 1979. My same question to everybody was, who or what is killing and mutilating these animals? And it was Lou Girodo was the first law enforcement guy down in the Trinidad District Attorney's Office who had the courage on the record in front of a camera to say in October of 1979, Linda, other investigators and I know that we're dealing with creatures from outer space. And then he described how they had seen with their own eyes these orange fiery disks in the sky, split in two, go down into the ground, come up into the sky, join together, and do 90-degree moves and do all kinds of bizarre things that fit into the category of what Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso said in strong words before he died in 1998, that our government has known for a long time that what he saw in a document, extraterrestrial biological entities were the perpetrators of animal mutilations around the world, but that there was a strict policy of denial in the interest of national security about it. Well, this many years later, at the end of 2006, there are too many ranchers and law enforcement and military who know. They know that we're not dealing with satanic cults, predator, or disease. And I think, don't you, George, that we all have a right to know what our government knows?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And earlier, when I talked about can we really handle the truth, you know, I was, of course, pushing the edge on that. I think we can handle the truth, and I think we deserve to know what's going on, Linda.
Right. And I don't think people will panic if it said, we're sorry, we can't stop it, but it's not focused on you. There is an issue here with some other intelligence. There's a survival, a nutrition, a genetic harvesting, whatever the reason is. If it's been going on all these years in a cover situation, that doesn't change it. It continues whether the government admits they know or not.
Sounds like they need the body parts on some other planetary system, Linda. Stick with us. Linda Moulton Howe will stay for one more hour, and the entire hour will be your phone calls, and then I'll have open lines later on. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.